Dream job or nightmare? It's hard to know if a career that looks great on paper will actually lead you to the life you want to live. So welcome to Dream Job Cafe. I'm Larry Port. I'll be asking different professionals the questions you won't find anywhere else. So grab a coffee, settle in. This is Dream Job Cafe.
Sponsored by Wayspark.co, where we help people navigate careers in a crazy world.
Hey everybody, how you doing? It's Larry Port again with the Dream Job Cafe podcast, and I have the great honor to be with Mark Wigder, who is a friend of mine. He is a Boca Raton city councilman, and he's been an attorney, a real estate attorney, a real estate investor, a business owner. He's been my landlord. He's had a lot of different things, and so I'm excited to have him to talk about, you know, what those careers have been like, but moreover, the whole idea of organic career growth. So Mark, welcome. How are you?
Thank you. Thanks so much. Thanks, Larry. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So Mark, tell me a little bit about like this journey, because I think, and I read you this quote from this book that I'm reading, I'm interviewing the author soon. The days of predictable straight line career paths are over. Today, a career isn't a simple progression, but a series of pivots, detours, and unexpected opportunities. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, no, totally agree. For me, you know, I mean, listen, I kind of live by a few mottos, and, you know, one of them is sometimes you have to let the universe unfold as it should, and sometimes you have to make it happen, you know? So the question of knowing when to do that, knowing when to just kind of follow a path that you've been set on, and knowing when to pivot, I think is a critical one. For me, again, I was practicing law for many years with my own firm, in-house with a real estate company. And obviously after the last recession, I saw some opportunities in distressed real estate where there was a lot of underperforming assets. And as a real estate attorney, of course, I was representing clients, helping them through the transaction of buying a property and doing all their legal work and their title work or their lease work, or et cetera. And, you know, obviously it was one of those kind of, it was one of those epiphany moments where I was like, well, you know, I'm making all this money for all these other people doing all these real estate projects. I'm like, you know, I think I've got to step up and try to do it myself. And so, as you know, I bought a property at the time. It was in Boca Raton. It was out of bankruptcy and foreclosure. And we, you know, we renovated it. Of course, we leased it up to, you know, your former company and many other companies, and rebranded it as a greenhouse, a place where we infuse sustainability into real estate. And then obviously we started expanding, you know, after, once I started my own company, and again, as a lawyer transitioning to corporate work, I kind of realized that very quickly that I didn't know everything. I didn't know a lot about branding. I didn't know a lot about marketing.
Oh, I see.
I didn't know a lot about all these other things. So I didn't know a lot about Excel and financial modeling, right? I was like a real estate guy putting the deals together. But once I entered the corporate world, I realized that there was so much more to learn. So I don't know if you're aware, but then I actually went back to business school later in life, and I was accepted to Yale, and I got my MBA with a sub-focus in sustainability, which is kind of what the greenhouse was about.
I do know this because there were like great swaths of time where you were not around, because yeah. I remember you would go back and forth.
Yeah. So I flew back and forth. So it was an in-person degree. So it was going back and forth to Connecticut every other week for 2 years, which was tough on the family. I mean, obviously I had a great corporate team to help me, but it was very, very challenging, but it was also the most rewarding experience, because it would be one of those things where I would be able to go to a class during a weekend and come back on a Monday, talk to my corporate team and be like, hey, look what I just learned and let's do this, and really implement some of those, you know, some of those strategies. So I think, you know, I guess one of those lessons is, you know, obviously you can't be afraid to reinvent yourself. You can't be afraid to make that pivot. You've got to have courage to do it, but also you also have the courage to admit that you don't know everything, and that, you know, and that's the first step, is right. There's always, you know, there's an endless amount of information that goes into, you know, running a company, and, you know, you have to appreciate that you know, if you have an opportunity to learn, whether it's just to take one class or, you know, one specific thing, one specific issue that you want to focus on, to take a class on it, or, you know, some sort of seminar or something like that, you know, do it, sign up, because that information could be valuable in what you're doing now and what you want to do in the future.
Can you talk a little bit about law school and why you decided to go to law school? And did you intentionally go into real estate law? Like, what was your philosophy about law school?
I was in law school in the mid 90s. And so in New York City, it was at a time where there was also a recession there. So the job market was not that strong. So going to law school right after college seemed like a logical choice. Number one, because the job market wasn't too strong. And number two, you know, even, you know, as a young college graduate, I realized that even though there was a recession right then and whatnot, that it wouldn't always be that way, that things are going to get better.
Right.
So it's funny because I went to law school and a lot of students were taking all these bankruptcy courses and restructuring courses because that's where the recession was right now. I was starting to take real estate courses and, you know, corporate courses and business courses because I was mindful of where the economy's going, right? Of saying, okay, well, yes, right now the economy is pretty bad and, you know, every law firm needs more bankruptcy attorneys and more restructuring, you know, attorneys and stuff like that, but it's not always going to be that way. So, you know, having a little bit of mindful insight, you know, on the macroeconomic conditions of kind of where we're going and then trying to be prepared for that was what was my basis for going to law school, my basis for studying real estate and corporate business transactional law. And like I said, when I left law school then, it was a cycle where things started to get better in real estate quite quickly. And it was very helpful in my practice and in helping start a company.
Can I ask you, from my perspective, like I feel like lawyers, like a lot of times they know how things work, like they almost know how everything works. Not, and I know that's like kind of a sweeping generalization, but the way that you had the front seat to the transaction that allowed you to launch into this career, it seems like even if you don't necessarily want to be in the practice of law, it's such a good way to enter the workforce because it gives you such a detailed look at how things kind of operate. Is that, and that's an outsider's perspective, is that accurate at all or?
No, in fact, I think it's very true. Yeah, no, I think it's very true. And I think, you know, when I usually discuss, you know, my relationship with clients or how I represent a client in a transaction, you know, I usually do ask about their business when I'm representing them, whether it's a real estate transaction or a corporate business transaction. I want to understand how my client's business works, right? Because in order to effectively represent a client in any given business, I have to understand what I'm representing. Right. And so I'm not just representing this bundle of rights. Right. I'm representing a dentist. I'm representing a dentist that wants to buy an office condominium in New York or Florida or wherever, but it wants to buy an office condominium. They want to have 4 exam rooms and they're going to have 10 people working there in 3 shifts. And they need, you know, 4, you know, they need 4 chairs. And, you know, they need to be able to work, you know, pretty much 24/7 or, you know, very, very long hours. But then you start to learn about construction, right? A dental chair needs water, as we know. It needs air. You remember they're spraying air. It needs suction, right? It needs vacuum, right? It needs electrical, right? So all those things have to stub up into the chair through the floor. So then from construction analysis, you start to learn, well, then we need to drill through the floor. So we need the right to drill through the floor. And so the bundle of rights is dependent upon the business, right? And so, of course, I'm negotiating in the documents, whether it's a lease document, whether it's a business document, whether it's in the, you know, in the acquisition department or with the condominium. Hey, we want to put a dental office here, but we need to have the right to do this type of construction work. From a legal perspective, we need to have the legal rights to do that kind of construction work. I don't think it's possible, Larry, to effectively represent clients if you don't really start to understand their business, right? So it takes a little bit more of that. And I think to your point, if you understand their business, then you could say, okay, well, now maybe I could do some of this myself. So like I said, because I have some knowledge in construction, because I have knowledge in real estate, it just so happens that not only did I do things on my own personal corporate level, but my largest group of clients was like dozens of dentists, because they would pick up the phone, and eventually I became known as this person who—
the dentist guy?
I just knew dental offices. I knew what's required. And of course, in places like Manhattan, it's a little bit more complicated, let's say. So, you know—
Did you get paid in root canals?
Exactly, right? No, so, thankfully didn't need a lot of that. But yeah.
Let me ask you this one. Like, you went to law school and you also got, you know, a business degree. And I'm sure there's a lot of people in college right now or even professionals that are thinking about going back to either one. Who might excel at one and who might not do well in, like, so if you were saying like, okay, for an MBA, it might be good for you if you're X, Y, and Z, if you have these proclivities or these tendencies, it might not be a good thing if you're like this. And the same for law school. Like, can you compare and contrast those a little bit maybe?
My feeling on the law school aspect is that, you know, in law school, the application of legal principles or logical principles is very, you know, is very detail oriented. There's a list of, you know, procedures that you're trying to follow. There could be federal issues, state issues, local issues. Then the business itself might have, you know, business issues, you know, both federal, state, and local. So my feeling on the law school aspect is like there is a, you know, a methodical, logical, checklist based, you know, based mindset that is, you know, that's very required, you know, and especially when you're trying to convert those bundles of rights and obligations into legal documents or a contract or effective representation of a client, whether it's in a litigation case because something went wrong, like the application of that law to those facts, right? You know, it's very logical and kind of connected basis. My feeling on business is that, on the MBA, is that, you know, it's a much wider, you know, it's a much wider net in terms of the, you know, there is the creative aspect, right? There's the entrepreneurship aspect, the innovation aspect, which can involve a lot more creative. There's the financial aspect, like the financial modeling and the asset management, which is a lot more math, you know, oriented. And then likewise, there is still a legal, methodical, logical proportion to, let's say, HR, right? So there's different divisions,
right,
in the umbrella of a company that we all think of that are much more in tune. So I think it kind of depends on what type of person and what kind of person you are, you know, might be a best fit. If you're someone who's like super creative and who loves the IDO, trying to get that minimum viable product going and move that stuff around, you know, I would see that person might find, you know, the strict manipulation of legal principles very challenging, right?
Like, yeah, that sounds like me.
Right? Right. Like, cause you're one of those, you know, you're one of those creatives where you're just like, okay, you know, I have this great idea, you know, and let's go do it, you know, mm-hmm. And then, you know, putting the vehicle in motion to do it requires maybe a little bit of all those things. It involves creative, it involves the financial, it involves the human capital, the legal component as well. So it's a little different, you know.
You took all these different kind of experiences, and it seems like what you're doing now, you know, did you ever in a million years think that you would be in public service, that you would like be a representative or a city council person or anything like that? And like, yeah, how did this happen?
Yeah, how did this happen? And, you know, I do tell people, you know, my feeling is that obviously as a busy family person, raising my children, having a company, having a law firm at the same time, it wasn't something that I, you know, that I consciously thought about. I do feel like it kind of evolved organically, you know, is that, you know, when I started my company, as I said, I went back to business school to become a more knowledgeable, you know, business person. And I always say, you know, the best thing about business school was not that it made me a better business person. I say that, you know, I think it made me a better lawyer, because I got to understand the mechanics of business so well that I could implement it into the daily law thing, into my law practice. And what I also found out is that when I was starting surveying my clients and my customers for marketing purposes, and I would ask them, you know, what are the biggest issues that face them in their business? Something that I could help as a, you know, as a greenhouse steward, kind of like in that, you know, in that educational component, you know, is there some way that I could kind of give them some friendly advice? And, you know, and you would think, though, the taxes are too high or something like this, you know, my business itself, you know, the business market is difficult. But undoubtedly, you know, across multiple business sectors in South Florida, in Boca Raton, you know, the biggest issues that I heard were, we can't find people to come to work. It's too expensive to live here. So as a result, the commuting distance is too long. It's too onerous to pull a permit or get a business license because of the multiple inspections that are required. Affordability is an issue. You know, commuting, mass transit is an issue. And so, you know, again, I started noticing that the issues that my customers were facing where they needed help to improve their business weren't really kind of business issues. They were really government issues. They were really issues where either the local representation or county or state or, you know, your railroad, you know, Tri-Rail is the local, you know, the regional transportation system down here where, you know, I was like, well, you know, so I started to talk to my city councilmen then. And obviously the first thing, you know, they said is, thank you for your input, which is, you know, usually what I say when people come to me. And the next thing they said is, well, why don't you get involved? Why don't you get involved? You know, because I think, you know, when you come to learn is that obviously, you know, people live in the city, you know, we manage the city, we operate the city, you know, we have a whole, you know, staff of people and police officers and sanitation workers and road workers that help manage the city. But a lot of outside people don't usually get involved. And so I joined it, right? So I joined a board. I joined a community advisory panel. You know, I'm a bike and a runner. So I joined the bike board as well. So I was on two boards for many, many years. And then I started to really learn the issues that are facing the city. And it eventually led to an election several years ago. So like I said, I do feel it developed organically.
And it seems like it would combine a lot of your capabilities that you've built over the years, right? Like, because you understand the law, which means that you understand how like different aspects of the government work and regulations work. And you understand real estate, you understand people. So how do you find that this role, does this role like really take advantage of the different talents that you've built over the years? Or is it stretching you, or what's it like?
Yeah, no, listen, obviously, I think it definitely combines my background and experience over the last 30 years. For sure, local, you know, local officials deal with a lot of real estate issues, comprehensive plan issues, zoning issues, site plan approval issues, you know, new building code policy issues and things like that. But it has also stretched me on things, you know, on things that maybe I wasn't so accustomed to, right? So like now, obviously, you know, you're learning about the needs of the police department, right? And so now the city's expanded, right? So you learn about real urban planning on a larger scale, like, right? So the city's 30 square miles, 18,000 acres, you know? So it's kind of going from like my greenhouse little world, which was 10 acres, to 18,000 acres, right? So it's like the issues that are required, you know, get multiplied, of course. So, you know, we're dealing with seawall reconstruction in the entire eastern, you know, entire eastern half of the city where there's lots of seawalls. And of course, many are getting older. You deal with budgeting and finance because the city's municipal budget is quite complicated. So yeah, it's a little, you know, the initial base of, you know, real estate knowledge, business legal knowledge is super, super helpful, you know, to have that good foundation. And then certainly now it's been stretched and expanded over the last several years, really understanding the issues on a local, regional, statewide, even federal basis, because, you know, even cities like Boca Raton, we get funding from the federal government for, let's say, transportation improvements and things like that. We get funding from the state government for also transportation and other types of improvements. And obviously, county, we're partners with the county on many, many issues, road reconstruction and whatnot, and obviously locally. So again, it's, multiple stakeholders are involved. And so my representation of the city is not just representing the people here and doing the daily work, but representing the people as we go deal with other stakeholders, whether it's county, state, school board, feds, you know, whatever the case is.
Well, between the lines there, there's also the skill, I mean, dealing with lots of different people, being able to negotiate, making sure people are happy. I'm sure there's a lot of emotion tied with issues with the city because it's where people live. Yeah. You know, is that new, or is that a skill that you develop in business or legal, or I mean, because it sounds like that is it's not being explicitly mentioned, but that sounds like it's like a pretty fundamental element and aspect of what you do.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Listen, obviously listening to constituents, initiating that in a city with 100,000 people and a daytime workforce of 200,000 people, you need to balance a lot of competing needs. And it is one of those issues where we appreciate that a lot of people have feelings, especially when it comes to something that's right near where they live. And there's sometimes people have feelings about how things are going in an entire city. And, you know, it's about balancing those needs, listening, and then likewise learning, right? So it's like learning the issues. So, you know, I'm not in a situation where I just, you know, will read emails and then respond. You know, usually it will be like someone will send me an issue or call me with an issue. I will research the issue. I will talk to the staff or the relevant staff member about the issue, right? So we'll get some data-driven analysis about the issue. If it requires some field research, like if they tell me something is wrong in a particular sector of the town, you know, like we had a street collapse because of, you know, a little sidewalk sinkhole or something, or, you know, like a seawall collapse, like I talked about, like I'll go see it. I'll say, what is happening in this, you know, in this world, in this sector, you know, how do we fix it? And then it's obviously that way when the staff reports, you know, when the staff reports to us and the city manager's office reports to us, I have some knowledge, right? It's not just, hey, $300,000 for a seawall. I will know this is where our taxpayer dollars are going. This is the issue. And so again, it involves a little bit more than, just quickly responding to every email that comes up. Usually I'm trying to do a research-based, you know, data-driven and empirical analysis approach, you know, to any major issue that comes before me.
So we talked a little bit about your career, but you have this kind of interesting vantage point where you see all these different operations across the whole city. Now, imagine you're like in front of like a class of like high school kids or maybe college kids, and you're like, okay, these are a bunch of jobs I didn't really know about until I started running the city. We talked a little bit about some of the civil engineering needs. And then like, I was just wondering, like, what is your impression? Like, what kind of like work is out there that maybe you didn't know about, or maybe people don't know about, or kids don't know about? And like, what is really needed right now? Because I think a lot of people are anxious that they're going to be replaced with a robot soon. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, no, certainly, you know, in addition, you know, when I was trying to expand my horizons and get into this, you know, and get into this role of understanding what the future workforce needs are, I volunteered, and I also teach business law at FAU in Boca Raton once a week. So I teach Business Law 1 and 2. It's actually teaching the students who are going to be the workforce. I teach them practical experience about this. And I also give them those kinds of stories of what jobs are out there, right? So, you know, jobs in civil service that you might not think about, you know, whether it's urban planning, whether it's engineering, you know, whether it's surveying, you know, and it's one of those things where I talk to a local surveyor, right? The surveyor is the property company that does land maps for houses or buildings or site plans or areas and whatnot. And, you know, at first blush, it might sound unremarkable, but the idea is you need to have some CAD experience, right? So you need to have some plotting and drawing experience. You need to have some legal experience, and you need to be able to review, let's say, a title report, the legal analysis of that, and you need to be able to then plot that. And then obviously it depends on the actual site, right? Every piece of land is unique, generally speaking. So you need to have some ability to, you know, to take that creativity. And what the surveyor told me, this is a couple of years ago, is that he was finding it impossible to find graduated college students who would be able to do this work, you know, because it's not that there was just this, there wasn't this path, right? Some students would go into architecture or art or some sort of, you know, it's design or something like that.
It's more famous, those fields.
Yeah, some students would go into legal aspects or something like that, but there was never this combination. So literally he went back to FAU and he talked to the Division of Urban Planning, and he, together with them, he helped them set up a course to teach surveying, you know, and obviously what's required there. He guaranteed anyone who graduates his class will get like $65,000 a year starting, and within 3 years, $90,000 a year. And of course, eventually he got those students who had a little bit of, you know, who didn't want to do just artistic creative design, you know, who wanted to do a little bit, you know, more of a different thing. So, you know, I think that was a great, great, you know, that's kind of just a great opportunity for, you know, for what that, you know, what that can be, you know. Obviously with public service, there's every level of that from urban planning and whatnot. And I see that a lot of students, again, might not know about these types of jobs, you know, initially. I know FAU is going to have an urban planning, you know, career fair. And there's, like I said, there's 1,000 different jobs just in urban planning that range from, you know, like I said, surveying to civil engineering. I just met with the railroad. So it's like, again, people don't appreciate, you know, what does it mean to work with a railroad? Again, you don't, you know, you don't think about, but the logistics required for railroad maintenance and operation, right? When we cross the streets that are near the railroad track, right? The timing of the signals, the computerization to make sure that the arms go up and down to keep people safe, to keep trains moving logistically in the right place and all those things, you know, very complicated stuff. And so I think, you know, the idea is, you know, is those observations about what's in the world around you. Like, how does the world, you know, how does the world work? How does, you know, is everything, you know, can be a different type of job. And obviously it's very, very difficult. There's not going to be that opportunity in college per se to say, hey, you could work from anything from managing railroads to hospitals, to, you know, urban planning, to AutoCAD design, to product design, you know? So I think it's just, there's just so much opportunity to go into public service. And if you get that background, what I've seen oftentimes is when you get that background in public service or in urban planning or something like that, maybe the urban planning or the public service pays a little less. Obviously, you know, you're of a state, you know, obviously it's city or state, you know, government salaries, but, you know, maybe a little bit better healthcare and whatnot. But the idea is the experience. You get so much experience that a lot of those people then, let's say, graduate to the private sector, right? They switch.
And they start their own businesses a lot of times too.
Exactly. Then they say, hey, I could do this AutoCAD. I could do this engineering thing. I could do this. I could start a business doing this. And so I've seen the people branch out that way. And that's been like really, you know, really, really helpful.
What you said reminds me of, there's a magazine, Inc. magazine. I don't even know if it's still in print anymore, but yeah, it's for entrepreneurs. And they used to have this 2-page spread in every issue, and it would just be a picture of something. Maybe it would be a professional tennis match. Maybe it would just be like, I don't know, like a street corner. And they would have arrows pointed at all these different things that you see, and it would talk about the companies that made them. Like, I think, like, if you walk through the world and you just are observant and you see all these different things and you go to your, and you ask yourself, how did that get there? There's jobs behind that and there's careers behind that. So, by the way, are there specific jobs with the turtles that we have on our beaches? That sounds like a cool job.
Gumbo. Yeah. The gumbo limbo right now. Yeah. There is a Logger's Head. I think it's up in Juneau Beach now, the Logger's Head Rescue Center, the turtles that we rescue in Boca Raton, because sometimes it happens, they get hit by a propeller or something. Right now they get shipped up to Juneau Beach to get rehabilitated and given back. But yeah, obviously marine engineering, that's a whole other job. Yeah.
All right. Well, Mark, this is really helpful. Can I ask one last thing of advice for the people listening to this podcast? If you could recommend maybe like one book, and I know that's like a big, tall order, are there any books or one book in particular that you would recommend for people to like take a look at as they're thinking about their futures?
I mean, obviously there's like, you know, the Jack Welch books, you know, and the business books, Leon Cooperman, you know, wrote some books, you know, I don't know, finding one book, you know, it would be so challenging for me to find, you know,
just one book, right?
One book, you know, it's just more about this, you know, the theory about reading about people's stories, right? So when you hear about Jack Welch and how he started, you know, GE, you know, or Leon Cooperman, you know, and it's like, you know, or Bernie Marcus and how he started, you know, Home Depot. So it's just, you know, very, very much I like to hear, you know, I like to read their stories of how this evolved, right? You know, and it's like, obviously you put yourself in those shoes. How did Mark evolve or Larry evolve to be where we are today? You know, and so, you know, I think it shows kind of that story that we've been talking about all, you know, during this conversation, which is, you know, it's not like I'm going to go start Home Depot, right? You know, it's
right.
Like, it's always like, hey, you know, I've been working on these, you know, selling consumer products and I see this need, you know, and, you know, I don't need to have someone else do it. I can do it, you know, or I could work with a group to do it, or I can get some investors to do it, whether it's Goldman Sachs or, you know, and what it means. So, you know, I think it's more about that, the series, you know, the series of stories, you know, of the business leader or the entrepreneur that really intrigued me. The, you know, in my earlier legal career, I did some hotel work, and one of the businesses was Fairmont and Four Seasons and Ritz-Carlton. And there was one book by the leader of Ritz-Carlton. His name escapes me right now, but the leader of Ritz-Carlton, the one thing that he stood out with me, really based in real estate, you know, he's going through this, you know, quality and service standard. And basically what he said was, the moment a customer walks through your door of a hotel, he was talking about hotels, or whatever business you're in, the moment that you have the first touch at a customer, you want every experience in customer service to be exceptional. Now, obviously he was talking about Ritz-Carlton, but the idea always stuck with me, Larry, that, you know, the idea is, any business that I represent, any customer that, you know, comes into my properties, whether it was greenhouse or what, you know, whatever it was, I really try to embrace that philosophy that the customer experience starts when they walk in the door from the first second. And if there's a break in the gap, well, I'm not going to fix that right now, or I don't care about customer service or quality assurance right now, or I don't care about, you know, how fast my billing is right now. If you let something, you know, in that chain of the customer contact lapse, that the customer will call you out on it, right? They'll say, well, you know, I love this company, but, you know, they never paid their invoices on time. Or, you know, they never cared about how their back of house works. So they never cared about something else, you know? And that always stuck with me, is that customer experience starts from the very beginning, that first touch point, to the moment they check out of the hotel room. And I think no matter what business you're in, you can appreciate that the customer is checking in with you, no matter what, even if they're buying a new iPhone or something, they're checking in with you. There's a customer experience during that time. And then in a certain respect, they're checking out. And so that every touch point has to be exceptional. And I think, you know, like I said, as a reminder that, you know, I'll go back and find the name, but that really stuck out with me.
All right, Mark, well, that is super helpful. Thank you so much for being with us today. So folks, if you like this podcast, please like us, share it with your friends. It's the best way for this to be spread. And if you can, please be grateful for something today.
Thank you, Larry. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to like and subscribe to Dream Job Cafe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And don't forget to check out wayspark.co, where we help people navigate careers in a crazy world.